2005 with Emil Kvorek, who was then first API manager. But since then, I moved to consulting from the first day. So for the last 12 years, I'm in consulting. Usually worked on solutions that need heavy customization, and I specialize in all AEC BIM API products. So not just Revit, but AutoCAD, Civil 3D, used to be even AutoCAD architecture. Now also getting a little bit into Forge.
Okay, my name is Keith White. I've just learned that I need to go first the next time we do this. So I'm previous to working for Autodesk. I've been with Autodesk almost 3 years now. I was a licensed architect before, so heavy user of Revit since about 2004, 2005. Turned programmer, so I started writing add-ins for Revit, developed some suite of tools that are being sold, you know, and presented here at AU for a couple of years. Joined Autodesk as a part of Autodesk Consulting, and like Miro, I work with clients from really all over the world, answering questions, helping to develop tools, stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know if I can offer much more than what they're going to offer, but I'm here to help.
I have a brave soul.
Hi. We are starting a project now where we are importing some very large plant models, and we are looking into reducing direct shapes for that part. Very simple, have it as simple and easy as possible. And we talk about perhaps over 100,000 parts in there. Will there be any performance issues in Revit? I tried to make 100,000 squares, and that was fine, but this will be a bit more complex.
Okay, you import what kind of files to create the
shapes? Well, we will read the geometry, how we will make use.
Oh, you use API to create them from scratch, using the Revit builder, right?
These cylinders, it would be something would be meshes because it's complex geometry, but it's an entire plant, so it's lots of elements.
Well, the biggest thing to remember working with imported geometry in Revit is one key issue of scale. Revit, from the bottom up, was designed as the modeler for architecture. So there is a range of numbers with which Revit works good with geometry. So very small details and very large numbers that could represent 40,000 miles or 1/15th of a millimeter. These are the extremes that could make your geometry either not work correctly in Revit or have some really serious performance degradations. There are recommendations on what is considered the reasonable range of numbers for geometry in Revit, and this is pretty much architectural scales. Let's say something from half an inch to, I think it's 30 miles or 40 miles, something like that. So these are the length range that you should operate within. In terms of performance of direct shapes, we don't even have too much experience with that yet. Direct shapes per se is pretty much new functionality, so we did do everything to ensure correct performance, but we definitely need to try and see how it performs at that scale. Yeah.
To add to that, I think one of the things is certainly if you're importing direct shapes, a Revit model can have that many number of elements, so that doesn't concern me. 100,000 elements is not something that strikes me as concerning. We can certainly handle that overall, and certainly with direct shapes. You saying that there are some meshes in there that may potentially cause some performance problems, that would be certainly something we'd be interested in hearing about, saying, look, when I bring these in, this changes performance by a factor of X. I think that is a little bit of a learning experience for us, as Boris mentioned, but I think we'd like to learn and actually see if there's something we can do if there is a performance problem. I would hope that there isn't.
I will let you know.
If I just may add something from a purely consulting and process standpoint, I've been using direct shape just to visualize sometimes things in Revit, for example, internal 3D room shape elements that I've been actually working with Quincy, who are here also. in the room, and it's very quick to create element, but one thing I would just warn you is you can't attach any shared parameters to it, to direct shared elements. So if you want to import the whole model with direct shared elements, I would a little bit question, is that the best way to use Revit? Because if you can't add content, if you can't add direct shapes, I'd like maybe to hear what is your business use case to see if maybe it can be done in a different way. So technically it's definitely possible, but is that the best way to do what Revit does? You know, we'd have to look into that from a non-technical view, from the business process, I believe.
Are you sure that you can attach shared parameters to this?
I'm pretty sure. But that's why I wanted to warn you.
But if,
I mean, that's
well, okay. So I'm okay.
I think you know the exact answer.
Well, there are two different objects. I just want to make sure if you're talking about direct shapes or there is shape, what is it called? There is another element that can be modified. But direct shapes, geometry, once you create it, it is not modifiable in
real life. No, it's not geometry, where you can add shared parameters to a direct shape object.
I think it's possible.
I thought it was as well.
No, I do
maybe
think
in a new version. I mean, I think in 2017, definitely not.
One last thing, because there are many more questions, I hope. Yeah. One last thing. In terms of performance, if you have many elements with identical geometry, please make sure that you use direct shape type and direct shape instance. It's definitely would boost performance, because it's the lightweight representation of multiple elements with the same geometry. So.
Yeah, both in terms of storage and graphical representation and drawing.
Yes. And to help you to find what's the same, there are some utilities in IFC toolkit, I believe. In IFC, there are some utilities to help you to find what is the same. I think I've looked into that once. It was quite useful. Something that Angel exposed while he was doing IFC for exactly the same problem, that if you have a repetitive thing, you don't create many instances, but just create one type and instantiate it many times.
But with the best, if I group them, with the best group or assembly, what will it be?
No, it's not about group and assembly. If the geometry is same, you create just the direct shape type and then reference many instances of the same type, rather than always making one type and one instance, one type and one instance. I think that's what Boris was saying. Yeah.
But I would like to group them. If I am to group them, would there be any performance issues between the grouping or assemblies, or is that...
It's... I would say it's probably similar.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
No big difference.
One of the problems I'm running into is this code signing when you're dealing with a single site and you have to go out and buy a separate item. So you can sign your code so that 2017 and on doesn't tell you, I don't recognize this publisher. And they've improved it to remember until you reboot your system. At least for me, next time I reboot the system, it forgets and it pops up 15 times. I want to have 30 different standalone items that I have to keep putting them into groups with buttons that tell the user which one they want to use, and I'd rather just have them all load immediately. But it seems to me that it should be somewhat automatic if you have a site license for Revit, that anything I've developed will load. There should be some functionality so that you don't have to make your own, you don't have to go buy the code signing thing.
So, Augusta, do you know where the Forge team is in kind of supporting code signing?
I don't know.
Yeah. So I think there was some discussion around the Forge team. As far as Revit is concerned, all we're checking for, it's stored in a standard Microsoft storage for signatures. So it certainly should not pop up again after you restart. So that would be something to address probably with Microsoft rather, or figure out why that is not getting registered. Because they basically track signatures and it's stored in a
signature.
Oh, okay. You don't have a signature.
I thought only developing for one firm, you shouldn't have to go get a signing service to provide something to you and have an annual license or something to keep it up to date if you're only going to be using it in one location.
So if you're developing for yourself, you should be able to develop it without signing your assemblies. Then when you load it for the first time inside of Revit, it'll prompt you that this is an unsigned assembly and you trust it. That act right there, it goes and publishes that certificate into a place in your Windows system that then Revit sees the next time you start Revit.
It doesn't seem to remember that.
Then that's a problem maybe with Windows, and I think that Jeremy even has some posts on the building coder that references some of those problems, and it may be Windows permissions based. It's preventing that certificate from being written to that directory, but it's not normal for that to continually present you with that dialogue. It should be once.
Now is I modify my code, I replace my DLL.
Okay, so then that has a new signature. That DLL now has a new signature, so it no longer matches.
But I'm saying when I come in the next morning and start Revit, and it gives me the same warning. And I was going to give you what? It's not the same DLL.
Right. So when exactly?
No, I mean after I've used it in the afternoon and I come in the morning, mm-hmm. having already said I trust this, the next morning it might.
Then that's a
problem. Yeah.
That's a Windows issue, not a Revit issue, because Revit is making use of those Windows services to check for that certificate.
I can answer that. I've actually fixed it. It's a group policy on the
yeah,
network.
Microphone.
Sorry.
It's a group policy on the network that restricts users from being able to either write to the registry or being able to write to the certificate store. So you would need to edit your group policy to allow that. And also, you can create your own certificate if you want to self-sign. You don't have to pay for one if you're doing it only on your own domain. Thank you. Is there a way to programmatically place keynotes at all? Like, I've delved into, like, the API and...
No, I checked specifically.
No, I'm sorry, that's my team, it's not exposed.
No, but first of all, thank you for asking. Because it seems to be that it's just... somebody didn't notice that it was not exposed. So kind of, thank you for noticing. And I had to check the documentation yesterday to confirm that, because it was supposed to be there, it is not. So we definitely try to address it at some point.
So.
No, I'm working on design automation. In all honesty.
So that's planned to be implemented then.
Well, that's exactly what we are not supposed to say here. But
we can talk about what is. We can talk about what is and isn't on the roadmap. I can't tell you when that roadmap stretches to. I can't tell you dates. It's not right now something that is on the roadmap. That said, this is kind of an opportunity for me to do the little spiel about Revit ideas. So we do actually look actively for Revit ideas. If you guys have you guys all heard of Revit ideas? Yes? Okay, good. Autodesk.com/Revit ideas. Pretty easy to find. So what you do is you can record your kind of wish list or request on there and vote for them. And a lot of the time I hear from the API community saying, oh, you know, there's not that many of us, we can't get the votes. Like, you don't have to get to the top of Revit ideas. There are a lot of people in this room. If every single person in this room voted on something, that would make it to the top of the API list, right? And so it is actually something that we actively look at to identify, especially for APIs that are things that just haven't been exposed for whatever reason because of legacy implementation. Those are the kind of things we really try to pick off as many of those as we can. So I believe there is a keynote one on there. If there's not, please do file one and vote for it. It is really important to make sure, because it's one place where we have a repository of all ideas, and that's really helpful to kind of see. I had another point there, I forgot.
Thank you. You know, I would add to that to say that what she was talking about with the Revit ideas, don't just go there and post your request and then leave and never come back. It's a community, right? So as a user, prior to becoming an Autodesk employee, there were ways to give feedback and give good feedback, right? And they listened. So there were opportunities where I was able to talk to some developers and had a suggestion, and it was an easy suggestion, and it made its way into the product sooner rather than later. But they really care. But you need to go back, and if you see someone else's idea, upvote it, right, to get some attention to it. So it's a part of this community. They're working really hard to create a product that works for really everyone in the world. No matter where you are, it should work for you to some, you know, to the greater extent. So it's our job to help them be aware of something that they weren't aware of before.
Figured out. Thank you. That is a really good point. And I did, in terms of new projects, you guys probably have seen one of the requirements for teams going forward for the last three, four years has been any new functionality must have an API completely. So we must be able to rewrite our UI on top of the API. For some teams, that's actually a requirement as well. So we do actively make sure we have APIs for any new work we're doing. But Revit is really helpful to go back and say, this part is Mason, you know, you can do this in UI, but you can't do it in API.
Hello. I wrote an add-in for our company that is a room tagging add-in. Come on.
Hello?
Yep.
It's a room tagging add-in. And provides a nice user interface, lets them select the views they want, the tag they want, a couple other properties in there. And even the sheets, it'll just take whatever sheet you say, figure out what views that are in there, and tag it. Great tool. Works well when the rooms are in the model, in the current model. But if you're looking at the way we work, most of the rooms are coming from an architect in a linked model. And there's a room property on the tag. And fine, it shows up when it's in, but if it's a linked model, that property is null. So you have no way of knowing through the API, if you selected a tag, what room that's associated with. That's a problem. I have a workaround for it. I put some extended data on it that points to that room. That's one problem. And then the second problem is there's no way to determine if you have like dependency views, where there's a flipping plane, you've got a small portion of room. You can't tell a linked model's if it exists in that view. So you have a room in a linked model. There's no way to query all the rooms and say, oh, am I in this view? And my workaround was I create the tags first, all of them, and then I can ask, hey, is this tag in this view? If it's not, then I just will leave. And that's kind of before I put that change in there, I didn't realize this thing was creating tags that were orphaned. I mean, they were still associated rooms, you just couldn't see them. So I was wondering, I've seen posts on it before where people do a wish list thing on being able to show the room reference from a tag.
Do you want to take this one, Dan? Because I think there's, in addition to just the room-specific functionality, I think there's certainly opportunity for us to actually work better with link files and being able to reference linked elements. And I think that is fundamentally something that's not very well exposed in the API at the moment. I'm sorry. No, in all seriousness, I you're right. There are a lot of places where things started working with links in the UI that didn't work. We didn't add it in the API either at the time because it was too long ago, or because we didn't think that it didn't notice it anymore. You should be able, we have a class called link element ID that lets you refer to elements in a linked model. I think we're at the point where we would have the ability to expose that value and say, like, oh, this isn't a room in a link. But we don't right now. Make sure it's on Revit Ideas if it's not already. If it is, vote for it. Slowly determine that my team owns everything that isn't exposed.
Well, I'm guessing most people would want kind of that functionality with links. I mean, who here doesn't? Maybe not want link functionality?
I don't care about it.
That's what I thought. So, everybody vote on that idea.
Thank you.
I have problems with raycaster, because sometimes it fails to identify the nearest surface to intersect, especially with topo surfaces. So I need to know if there is any precaution I should take to make sure that the raycaster will find the nearest surface to intersect, and if there is a way to filter it, which category or family that I need the raycaster to intersect with.
So
I think, if I may, I think especially with the topo surface, if it is not a regular rivet surface, if it is a mesh, raycaster would not correctly find it, right?
Okay.
Is this so just make sure there are different ways to create a topo surface. Is it always mesh or sometimes, that's what I don't know. But one thing is for sure, if it is a mesh, raycaster does not see it as a regular surface.
Okay.
If it is a surface, then it should be fine.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing to check.
So if I want to filtrate the type of elements that I need the raycaster to find, is it possible for the ABI or is it not possible?
I don't remember.
I think you can, if I remember vaguely, you can pre-filter. You can pass pre-filter selection to ray tracer. I mean, I vaguely remember from some solutions.
Oh, you mean you can create just regular element filter and
yes.
pass it as an argument to
ray? Yeah, I think so.
That's probably the way to go. So, and actually, element filters, they're quite powerful. You can use a lot of different criteria, parameters, categories, and everything else. So, check it out. It should be one of the input arguments. If I'm again
talking about same, but I think we are.
Shoot us an email, we can confirm that.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm having trouble importing shared parameters to system families. The code works perfectly for every other type of object except systems.
So you should add them, I believe, as project parameters that are shared. That would be to those categories, I think.
Is that the only way?
I believe that is the only way to add share parameters to
example. When you say systems, do you mean system families or do you mean any system?
System families.
Because
yeah. I can actually attach, I can go through the same process of temporarily switching the shared parameter file to the one I've got, attaching that parameter name, a shared parameter, to the category, which works fine with system categories. The trouble starts when you try to set that parameter, and it says it's not a type parameter. That's the error you get.
It should be exactly the same whether it's a system family or RFA. There is absolutely no difference. If that category appears in the UI when you say bind category, then so that there is absolutely no difference in behavior in systems.
Oh yeah, the binding works
yeah,
perfectly. Right. But when you bind that parameter, which starts off as empty, then when you try to put something into it, that's where you get the error. So the set function doesn't work.
So when you're binding the parameter, you should determine how you decide how to bind it as a type parameter, as an instance parameter.
Yeah, that goes through fine. But next step, when you try to set that parameter, put some text in it,
mm-hmm.
that's when it fails.
I think vaguely, I can hear this problem. You have to finish the transaction of binding before you try to attach it.
So you have to start another transaction.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's
so what you do is you have to go and insert all your parameters first,
yeah.
then you have to go back and start to edit the data. So you have to finish the transaction of inserting and mapping.
So you
end
the transaction and then you start another transaction in the same plugin?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah, so whenever I've done that in the past, I just blanketly insert all the shared parameters I need, finish the transaction, then I start iterating over whatever elements I want to affect with a new parameter value,
yeah.
and then it'll work. So you're caught in a situation where it's technically making you have the technical terms, but it's not recognized in the database yet, so you can't affect the data in that parameter until the transaction is closed.
Yes, it's actually one of the best recommendations for any API development for Revit. Please remember that closing the transaction, you the only state of inconsistent data in Revit is between opening the transaction and closing the transaction. Because then you just randomly change some data, created some objects, and the only way to bring Revit model into the consistent scale is closing the transaction, which automatically calls regenerate. And that action actually causes everything that depends on your changes to recalculate. So you bring model back to consistent state by closing the transaction. So sometimes consecutive changes need to be done in separate transactions. This is probably one of the cases. It's not recommended.
And with regard to, just one more little one, with regard to actual family parameters, not shared parameters, but family parameters embedded in family, at the moment, the only way I can create them is by automating the keyboard-mouse combination to go and click on an object to... so you click on an object, then you you automate the process of clicking on edit family, open it up, then you import it in, and then you click close, and then window pops up, you scroll up and click import. That's a long process. Is there a way to speed that up without having to open the family?
Well, I'm not sure. Maybe Paolo knows. You've done a lot of work with the family editor, Paolo. So you may answer.
He should be here. And Paolo is our expert on Dynamo, but uses sort of API and expert on that.
Yeah. Sorry. Actually, I didn't quite follow.
So to create a conventional family parameter,
yes,
not a shared one, there is no way of doing that without opening the family for editing first. So you have to be in the family editor before you can do it. And the only way I can do it is by automating the keyboard mouse combination to click on it, to edit it, and...
There's actually, you know, because the family is a document, okay? I'm probably not too much technical here, but it's like a document, so you can open it in the same application. So when you're pointed to the family object from the RVT file, you can actually call the edit family method. So it opens in the application, and then you can do whatever you want, as if you were dealing with the UI without the UI though.
But when you close that family object, the editor window, then you get a window coming up saying, would you like to load that into the family? That's
okay.
When you have to go through the keyboard automation to click that. No.
Okay, so there's a slightly more technical thing to do. So you need to create, you need to inherit from an interface the load family options, and from there you need to say what you want to do in this case. So for example, you want to disregard the values or the new share families that you may have in the family document that you're editing, and once you have decided how you want to deal with these objects, then you can just save the family and reload it directly in the document, the RVT file. So you don't have to go through that pain.
Oh, I see. So it's a pretty selective answer to a predicted question, is it?
So there's an overload that asks you...
Oh, an overload, okay.
There's an object to load, an option, load family option object that you need to create by yourself, so it's a separate class that you need to inherit from an interface. And you have two kinds of methods that you need to implement. Being an interface, so you can decide how you want to deal with new values or new shared events. Okay.
Thank you.
Just one question. You do have to load it separately, change changes, make the changes, and reload it. Even in UI, I mean, right now we do not support changing family contents from inside project.
Also, you have to then offload that family and reload it again?
Yeah,
you don't have to offload.
Oh, you can just reload.
You just have to call load that Paolo said, and when you call load, there is signature, you say, do you want to override parameters? But you can do it programmatically. You shouldn't be able to
do an
NP.
Yeah, there's a full API to edit the family, modify it, load it without any user interaction whatsoever. But to Rahul's point, yes, editing the family is necessary because it is a separate document, and there's actually a lot of stuff that happens during load that's not just copy-pasting. There's actually elements that move between the two different... it's really complicated, but...
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I've kind of a quick one.
if we use the markers on text style to display basically a grid of numbers in Revit. We were hoping to extend that to also show contour lines that follow the numerical data, and we found that the ABF doesn't really support that. There's the shaded option, but there's no actual just lines. I was just wondering, is there any other approach we could take besides using the analysis framework to show contour lines?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, 2018, and if you have really detailed questions about how to do it, talk to Alex right here in the front. So there's something called the Direct Context API. This allows you to draw any kind of graphics that you want directly into Revit. Revit doesn't care what you draw because we don't actually look at what you draw. We just draw it. We push it to the graphics card. So it's really powerful. It's actually what we use to implement the coordination model. Yes, thank you. Now it's underlined. In other words, yes, the coordination. So that's actually using that API to push those graphics. Now this underlay was actually our initial implementation, kind of try it out and test out that API, but that API is really, really flexible.
I guess just a follow-up to that, when using the AVF, we've noticed we've had all sorts of problems with printing the results, so the numbers get clipped and things like that. Well, this new direct context API, do you anticipate it would have similar problems, or is it a completely different graphics thing?
Do you want to try?
I can try to answer that question. So direct context is completely different from AVF, so there's a good chance that your problem is solved. I'm not sure about text, if you're referring to printing text. Maybe we should talk about that separately.
Well, of numbers.
Right, numbers. And another thing, so direct context graphics are produced using rasterization, so they can be printed in the raster format only. Perhaps you should expect that.
Last point, quick one. If you do want to use AVF, there is something like contour lines. Because if you are using the option called colored surface, you can use the gradient color that is, corresponds to the values you put on the surface, or you could use the solid colors. And pretty much you set the ranges, and it does draw lines in between them. I mean, so these are your contour lines. So there is a way to do something like it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what we tell people to do
okay.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not exactly what they want.
All right, yeah. Whatever is there.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
There are questions in the back.
Yeah, just a short question. Revit API is really bad at working with materials. For example, it's still not possible to assign material to the column from the API in 2018. So here's the question. Do you have any plans to improve it? And when actually can we get something like that?
Well, there are different aspects of this question. Let me make sure. One biggest improvement for materials that was done for 2018, and I present that tomorrow. It is now possible to modify visual appearance of materials through API. It was a long-standing request, but you're asking about different things. So how you assign material to a column. Column means family, right?
Two different elements. For example, I can assign material to a specific element, not to the whole category.
Well, again, unfortunately, it does depend what the element is. The if it is the family instance, for example, I think the only way to change the material, you need to open the family for editing, pretty much similar to this procedure, and figure out how materials assigned there, assign material, and reload the family. For example, for walls, it's totally different API, how you assign materials. You assign materials to layers. So kind of, in many cases, it is specific to the element, right? So there is no unified way to assign material to an object. That's definitely so, yeah.
Just one quick question. So when you say to column, do you mean to instance of a column? Do you see?
The column was created programmatically as well. There was such bug in Revit 2016, and it was said that it was fixed, but actually you still cannot assign material from the API.
But have you got material in the list of parameters for that column?
Let's say I have some custom material.
Because if you have...
I want to create material and assign...
If you have a material in the parameters for that either instance or type, you should be able to look through parameters. That parameter will be of element ID, and then you can assign other element ID for materials. And it should work.
Well, something tells me that this is probably some bug that you found. Because whatever it is, we definitely need to see the specifics. So, is there something that's not done? Is it discussed on building coder or anywhere? Probably the easiest way, just shoot us an email.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. I think Jens is probably no, but I'll put this out here. So this kind of goes off some previous questions about editing families. Like, I understand that you need to edit the family to actually edit it, but what I'd really like to be able to do is just sort of replicate the project browser level. Like, you don't need to do things for the families, but like a lot of the tools I'm writing are like batch processing tools, the tools that are like trying to modify other families. So I have a project that's got like 4,000 families with 7 levels of nesting, and I want to modify all the families in a certain category. So like right now, there's, as far as I know, there's no easy way of finding all, including nested families, all the families in the project that are of a certain category. Right. So having some way of just sort of like at a metadata level determining like that there are all these, annotation families, that the only way you'd actually see that as a user is by opening and editing the nested levels of families.
Okay, so not shared nested, like, just regular nested.
The regular nested families, whereas a user, the only way you'd find that out is by editing the family, right? So, I mean, I can programmatically, like, recursively go through the entire model and open and close every single family to determine that, but it'd be nice if there was just sort of, like, a simple map that said, at a high level, there's all these families with these names in this category, for instance. Yeah.
So the problem with that is the problem with that is that nested families actually do not exist in the project environment. There is no reference, so the project doesn't know that those families exist.
I was saying it would be nice if the family itself just sort of knew at like a very high level of like what families it contains.
Okay.
Not like the actual functionality or all the parameters, but just sort of like the name, I contain these nested families, and those nested families know that they contain these nested families with this like name and category, and is it shared, so basic like set of like 5 parameters that identify that this exists so that you could use that as a tool to determine, oh, that exists down in that level. This is a tree I need to go parse down through and go find, rather than what I'm doing now, which is just go through everything. Basically like open and close every single family in the project to find 3 families that happen to be nested, right?
Hi, how you doing? My question is more about integration of spec sheets into drawings. So the problem that we're having is we have our spec writers that wants to control the spec sheets and a Word document. These spec sheets can spread over 12 drawings. So we have a workaround where we export and import images and do that. Do you have an interface where you can work better with Word over several sheets?
We do not. I think there are a number of partners that do actually provide something along those lines. So it's certainly worth taking a look at what's out there kind of from partners, some of them who may be in this room. I think that's probably the best short-term solution. The other thing is usually what we say from the Revit perspective, we certainly don't want to store all that information in a Revit file, right? We kind of want to say you can have access to all that information, but Revit file is probably not the best repository for it, so it's also something to think about. How do you externally potentially reference them rather than trying to include them directly? Again, it's worth having a slightly longer conversation than we can have here about what your workflow is and why the spec sheets need to be included directly.
Okay, the question came about because, normally people have like a smaller project which, you don't want to go through the whole process of getting a big spec book, so it's just a quick way of referencing something. So if anybody who's here that know how to interface it, please talk to me afterward.
Hi. We have an add-in which creates legends in Revit, but it's a little bit of workaround to create a new legend. We have the an empty one which we copy and then modify for our needs. Is there any way that is going to change in the near future?
So there are a number of legends requests and Revit ideas. So I don't think we have anything concrete that I can think of on the roadmap right now in terms of changing that. Certainly, I know that there are a number of requests around legends, so it's something we may consider investing in going forward. The challenge, of course, is the minute that we touch legends, there are about a million requests that people have for changing them. And it's, you know, why didn't you do my request kind of thing. But it doesn't mean that it's less important to do that. And certainly, automating processes, like being able to create them more easily, seems like a very, very reasonable thing to do, because then it means that we actually have to do less in terms of legends.
Yes, because I have two other questions for it. In the latest version of Revit, there's an extra function called find reference by name for family instances. That's working great. But if you create a legend, you have no family instance. You have just a symbol. But how to find a reference on a symbol? There is no find reference by name on a family symbol. It should be nice if it was possible, so we can create our measurements automatically. Now we can only do that on views, because there we have a family instance, but on a legend, we don't have that.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of part of the reason that we're a little bit hesitant to enhance legends, because they're not really real geometry that you can measure and treat that way. So that I think that's part of the problem that we have, and that's kind of my understanding, is that the geometry is actually representational. Am I not right, anybody?
Yeah. Yes, it's mostly a pretty picture, but it doesn't have a lot of information in it. I don't think even does the legend have named references at all?
No, because the legend component is just a family symbol, so not a family instance. So that's not why I find reference by name is not available. I can do it by hand, so I thought if I can do it through the Revit UI, so there must be a way I can do it through the API. That's not the case at the moment.
Yeah, so yes, you're basically saying, can you extend the same functionality beyond instances to symbols?
Yes.
Certainly think about that.
I just have one last question, also about legends. normally, you can rotate a lot of elements, but in a legend, if you place a legend component, it cannot be rotated. In our case, we have a special business case where that's necessary, but currently we cannot do it. Also, we cannot do it through the UI, so through the API is also not possible. Maybe any plans for changing that?
Not at the moment. Yeah, but certainly all of these things, like I said, it is really important to put all this stuff in Revit Ideas, and ideally as separate requests, not as the same one, because we may be able to take one and not the other, and if it bigger requests do not mean that it's more likely to be implemented, it's actually tougher for us to fit it into our development schedule, just FYI. So it's better to have smaller things.
Okay. I've got two. First one is one of the tool types we typically develop is Luna. So one of the requests was to accept the primary design option in a model. Is there a way to accept? I was not able to find one in the design option set class. And then my second question has to do with the document opening event. We're trying to track model health and file paths and all types of information. But one of the items that isn't in there is whether a user selected the option to audit a model. I know I can get
option what?
So I know I can get that from the journal file and parsing that, but it'd be good if that was just property. So design options.
Yeah, so in terms of design options, I believe we don't have any design options API exposure, so I'm guessing that it's not available. So I think that is probably more achievable than doing a full design options API. It's actually quite a large project, which is really why we haven't done it to this point. because we actually have to rewrite a lot of the internals to support the API. But just being able to accept the primary option seems like a much more achievable thing, because it would be a little bit more straightforward and just basically execution or something. So, again, please put it under the ideas if it's not on there. I sound like a broken record, and I apologize about that, but it is really important that everything is kind of documented in one place.
Yeah, and the document opening event, again, it's probably not a big deal to add an extra thing in the argument, but it was not just there, so again, put it on the ideas section.
Will do.
For host-based panels, the orphaned elements, how can I rehost them if I want to do this again? And I tried to update the host parameter, but it doesn't work. Is there any method to rehost the orphaned element again?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understood the question. So host-based family, and you want to do what?
Yeah, for example, if I have a ceiling-based family, and I delete the ceiling and recreate it again, so all the attached elements will lose the host.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to rehost them again to the new ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I do this for the ABI?
Just rehost for family.
Or even if I updated the host parameter, it doesn't work.
Yeah, so I think the host parameter right now is, I think, read-only, which is probably why you can't modify it, and I believe we are missing a rehost method. So that is another really good request.
Okay. I felt the only workaround I have done is to recreate another instance of the same families, apply the same transformation, and rehost it to the new ceiling or flooring. Okay.
Not a great workflow, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is another problem.
Yeah. Hi, I have two questions about piping. The first one, I'm a little bit new to programming against the API. I thought that the first thing that I'd automate would be pretty simple, be sloping pipe. So I go to the UI and I know that I can just pick a quarter half per foot. Turns out that that's the read-only parameter and I can't set it. So that's fine, but I wanted to know if, I guess I kind of wanted to know how you guys do it internally. Do you get the length and then drop the Z coordinate by a certain amount, or do you guys?
Well, there are not a lot of people here who know about piping. Yeah, so that's definitely, because MAP developers are not here, so we should have one extra expert, yeah. So if you can help with the answer, please do.
I think the answer, just for record, was do a little bit of math, figure out what that line is, turn that line into a curve, and turn that into a pipe.
Is the fitting going to follow it?
Are you curving? Are you doing anything with
it? Well, if I drew a new, if say that there was a straight piece of pipe and I wanted to slope it, if I drew a new line and then turned it into a pipe, that fitting would still be however far above the... And then the second one, I can't really tell you exactly how many times I've tried to Y in a branch into a main and it goes the wrong way. And I can't find anywhere where I can actually say, like, the flow's going this way down the pipe, Revit, please Y in so that it goes that way instead of trying to go upstream. Is there any plans to implement, being able to say in a piece of pipe or for a system or whatever, like, go that way.
Like, well, connectors are supposed to do that, right? Like, connectors are supposed to specify direction?
So, yes. They do. In the in and out, there's a couple different connector types that you can use, but for a fitting connector, there's no way. And if you have a really, really complex system, like I've spent hours and hours and hours trying to find, it was my backflow preventer. I had flipped around, and it was ruining the entire thing. I just had to flip it. It was a piping accessory, and then it worked. But
right. So I think this is one of those questions we just need to take offline. So if you can shoot me an email, I'll make sure to send it over to the MAP team, who can probably get you a better answer.
Okay. Yep. All right. Thank you.
All right. Load is group is a UI functionality. I don't believe it's available in the API. So I've mimicked it, but I cannot move the insertion point. Anything that anybody can help me with?
A vote on that idea. Yeah. It's that's one of the ones that's on like a really short list that I'd like to get done because it's very painful because you can't really edit a group and you can't load the group and you can't do anything with groups, and I realize people use groups all the time, so.
Door handling, or more abstractly, scheduling whether an object is mirrored or not. Is there a would be available in Europe?
It's a trick probably to do it. I mean, I don't think it's available in the product, isn't it?
Nope.
But you can do a simple trick. You can check the through API whether is mirrored or transformation is flipped. There are all information, and then just push that in a shared parameter of true false, and that's it. And then check that parameter. It should be a two-step project.
But there's also an idea for that.
Is there?
Yeah, there is. Well, I think in terms of actually improving it, I guess a lot of the things that you know, I'm hearing here are actually on ideas, but please do vote for them.
Okay.
Again, sorry, I sound like a broken record.
Hi, this is on groups also. We have extensible storage on a group, and if we change the offset or the level parameter, the extensible storage just disappears.
I'm hoping that you.
So
when you change the level of a group, any extensible storage on the group disappears. Does changing the level of a group secretly delete it and remake it?
That's probably because it's creating a new instance here. Yeah, but. It could be a bug. You should file
a... Yeah, that's a bug, really.
That's
but
a bug.
Even if I know why it's happening.
Yeah.
It probably changes the instance ID, doesn't it?
Maybe. I haven't seen into that, but a user can do it when we are not running the code, so we can track it and reapply it.
You should file an issue for that.
Yeah, certainly stuff like that occasionally, because secretly under the hood will replace the element, and if it's just missing the code to copy the extensible storage, it will occasionally drop it. I've encountered that in a couple of other cases. So if you guys come across that, please let us know. We'll fix it.
Yeah. And also rotation on the group, like just location rotation.
They all say it's fall in the same category. Rotation, changing group types, all those things. If you find those issues. They are more like extensible storage issues, but we could still probably handle them.
Yeah, but I was just thinking of getting the rotation. If you go to location and rotation, it's empty zero.
No transform on the instance. It's probably you probably can't get it as a parameter, but you can probably get the transform of the group instance, and you can probably calculate it back. For now.
The group instance would probably have a transformation, right?
Yeah, but the rotation is null, zero, nothing.
Yeah, but from transformation matrix, you should be able to work out. I think that's what I was saying.
Well, it's okay. So if you can't get it, if the transformation matrix doesn't include a rotation, which seems odd to me, but it's, you know, things happen. Yeah, also another thing I think to file to the ADN team, and then we can kind of investigate it.
I have a couple of questions. I've spoken to some about these. Shared parameter names inside Revit, not being able to rename them. From my understanding, they're using the GUID anyway, so the name should be free and flexible to modify it with.
It's not. And the reason is because it's the GUID matched with the parameter name, and that's the unique identifier. That's why it's
okay.
Difficult. But I think we understand the problem, and I think longer term what we're looking to do is figure out how we can use cloud services to allow you to define parameters so you don't even have to deal with shared parameter files. That's the long-term solution that we'd like, the way we'd like to approach it, because we want to actually, because that will allow people to transfer between company boundaries. This is not limited to one shared parameter file.
Because on top of that, with when you've got a shared parameter, project parameter, family parameter, and fourth one, it's almost impossible in Revit without cycling through every single type of parameter to work out what it is. You, across a large number of parameters, you could be spending a lot of PC time just sort of trying to calculate which parameter it is you're trying to attack, and you know, because each of those parameter types have the same name, so you can't use the name to go off. So you've got a you can get them, but it's a difficult task.
So are you basically saying, given a parameter, you'd like to find out what kind it is?
Yeah, so a shared parameter, a project parameter, family parameter,
and built-in
fourth one is.
Built-in parameter.
Yeah, built-in parameter. You could have the, one called name one for each of those four instances, and so it's very hard to work out which is which.
Not just that, but you can have the same name in the same of these four, so you can have four times n. And it's all legal in Revit. That's how it's designed, unfortunately.
Yeah,
fortunately.
It's just very hard to work out. If it had a type on it, a numero, it would be easy to work out what it was. Other ones are probably on ideas already, but ability to get into view templates programmatically and customize templates.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's on there as well.
On there, undo handler. Ability to see when somebody's undoing and what they're undoing. Track adds, modifies, deletes, but you can't track undoes unless you're doing a whole lot of other, you're tracking PC or you're tracking keyboard transactions.
Okay, that's interesting.
And another one, which is more sort of probably Revit-based, is the ability to apply a level matrix, much the same way you can with phase inside a Revit, so you can matrix between different offices the phases. If you could matrix between the levels throughout projects, then in schedules and the like, you've then got access to schedule and its filter or sort and group by level. At the moment, you're, I think, limited to either filter or grouping, but the ability, and depending on the way that they're named, the names sort of bounce all over the place as well as soon as you include linked models and a schedule. Why don't I explain that right
there? Please try to describe the problem.
It's
difficult to follow all the steps you just described.
So in Revit, when you've got a linked model, you've got the option to go to the model and the matrix up the phases of the project. So the phases align for each of the different models. I might call my phase one, another guy might call his stage one.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do that also with levels, so somebody might call theirs, or even at the moment, if I call mine level one and the other guy calls his level one, when it comes into schedules, it doesn't recognize a level as a level anymore, just sort of dumps it back down to text.
So basically you're saying you'd like a level map the same way there's a phase map.
Yeah, and then for the schedules to also recognize it as...
Make sure that's on Revit Ideas. I mean, as you know, it's not exposed now.
I put it on Revit Ideas and it's come back on.
If you are hearing this and you think that sounds cool, you should vote for it.
Put it back on.
Other people.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
I'm really, really sorry to interrupt, but our time is up, sadly. We ran over like 5 minutes. So I will put the notes on the AU website. Yes, with the notes and as a handout. And that's it. Thanks for coming. Round of applause for our staff.
Yeah.